There's always a need for the words of exhortation, so we call upon our brother Clive Snowblin at this time to give us those necessary words.
Well, good morning, brothers and sisters. The exhortation this morning asks an important but very provocative question. It comes from the third chapter of 2 Samuel. And that is, will you die a fool's death? Will you die a fool's death? And the exhortation comes with a cast of characters, as we find out from the 2 Samuel chapter 3 reading that we had. The first one being Abner. Not the least, and perhaps maybe the most important character in this chapter. Abner's name means father of light. Now, there are a number of interesting things about Abner. First of all, he's Saul's cousin, which is probably an interesting anomaly of family birth, that Saul would have a first cousin as the commander of his army. 1 Samuel chapter 15, verse 20. He was a full term, as far as I can see it, a full term commander of Saul's army from the very beginning, till the time when Saul was killed on Mount Gilboa, and on for another few years until finally the kingdom was transferred to David. And that's what we were reading about in 2 Samuel chapter 3. It was a momentous event in the history of the nation, the transfer of the kingdom from the house of Saul to the house of David. And Abner was pivotal, I think we should say, to the outcome of this. Abner introduced David to Saul back in 1 Samuel 17, 57. He was there when David was chosen to challenge Goliath. Abner would have been, very shortly after, until the time of his death, probably David's worst enemy, David's worst nemesis. Because for a large portion of the history of Abner, he was tasked with chasing David down, leading Saul's army to chase David down. And in 1 Samuel chapter 26, verse 14, we find Saul camped out with his army in a circle around Saul, who was in the middle. And David and Abishai penetrated the circle of the army, penetrated the defenses, and came right up to where Saul was sleeping. And Abner would have been right there. And David turned down the opportunity to kill Saul at that moment, instead taking his spear and his water jug. He was subsequently scolded by David for his lack of attention and sleeping on the job. 2 Samuel 2 and verse 18, Abner kills Joab's brother Asahel in self-defense. And this is something that we need to understand as we move forward. Chapter 3 verse 10, we find reading this morning that Abner fully understood the Davidic covenant. He was a very valuable man because, being the commander of Saul's army, he knew every inch of the territory of Israel and Judah. He'd camped and conducted campaigns throughout the entire nation area of the nation of Israel and Judah. He knew the law. He knew the laws regarding the use of the land. He also knew the laws regarding the cities of refuge. And they were cities that were set aside for judgment and for justice and for manslaughter, those who were fleeing from manslaughter. And he clearly knew, as a result of that, that Hebron was the main city of refuge in Judah. We find in chapter 3 of 2 Samuel that Abner, because he's insulted by the kind of king that he'd set up, one of the sons of Saul, is offended by him and defects to Hebron, to David, and seeks reconciliation of the nation. And they've been fighting for some time. It says at the beginning of the chapter that it was some time, and it was probably 7 years that this war had been going on, the civil war between the house of Israel and the house of Saul and the house of David. Abner defects to Hebron, seeks reconciliation of the nation, and acknowledges the promises of God to David. Following a truce, Abner agrees to hand the army of Israel and Benjamin over to David as king of all Israel. And as we read, he was dispatched to go and talk to the elders of Israel about bringing the nation back together to David in Hebron. Then we have Azahel. Now, Azahel was one of three sons of Zeruiah. And you notice in the reading this morning towards the end of the chapter, David mentions the sons of Zeruiah in not a very happy light. Azahel means fleet-footed. And he was evidently known for, well, he's kind of like the roadrunner in David's army. He could run faster than anybody. If Azahel was chasing you, you were done. He's a son of Zeruiah. Zeruiah was David's sister. And following this last skirmish, Abner and his troops were heading north to go home, and Azahel decided to chase Abner, pursue him with the intention of killing him. The conflict had kind of ceased, and he catches up with Abner and proceeds to kill him. And I have no idea why he would do that, unless he wanted it on his resume or something. Had he taken out the commander of the Israeli army? Abner tried to talk some sense into him and said, no, back off. We're not fighting anymore. I don't want to get engaged with you. I don't want to have to fight with you. And to prove that, the text tells us in chapter 2 of 2 Samuel that Abner had his spear pointed backwards as Azahel approached. In the NIV, it says he had the butt end of his spear pointing out. Not the pointy end, was pointing backwards. This was not an act of war or a declaration that he wanted to fight. This was defensive. Azahel continues, and Abner, who couldn't run as fast, but knew how to deal with a spear better, at least the back end of a spear, and runs it through Azahel, and he died on the road. This was clearly self-defense. The words are all in the text in chapter 2. Then Azahel, of course, his name means fleet of foot. Abner, the name means father of light, which, you know, we like to refer to these names because very often they have meaning. The other son, the next son of Zeruiah was Joab. His name means Jehovah is his father, which indicates, I guess, that we don't always get the names right. He was David's nephew. He was the captain of David's host from the time that David was running from Saul, from the time that David put together an army to defend himself and his associates from the armies of Saul. Joab, being Azahel's brother, was the official avenger of blood. And in the law, of course, the person whose family had been killed, it was their duty to carry out the sentence of death and execute the murderer. Problem was, this wasn't murderer. This wasn't murder we were talking about. It was self-defense. And that is precisely what the City of Refuge was for, because if you fled to the City of Refuge, then you could find judgment there and justice. We'll talk about that in a moment, God willing. And then there's Abishai. His name means father of a gift. He was one of the three brothers who were sons of Zeruiah, David's nephews. He was a general, I guess, in David's army. He was ranked lower than his brother Joab, but he was certainly a prominent, mighty man. He was the one who accompanied David in 1 Samuel 26, verse 6, into Saul's stronghold. He was the one who said, here is Saul, your enemy, lying, sleeping. He said to David, I'll take my spear, and just so there's no noise, I'll run him through once. Not twice. Is that in the text? Not twice. I'll run him through once. And David said no. These sons of Zeruiah had different views of life than what David had. He had a very different view than David. And so we end up towards the end of that chapter with David standing on a hill opposite where Saul was and scolding Abner, holding up the spear and the water bottle. And then there's this character, Ish-bosheth. He was a son of Saul and therefore a rightful heir to the throne. Abner, of course, was the captain of Saul's army, so he kind of controlled the army. He controlled Israel. He was kind of the de facto head of the nation, and then appoints this son of Saul to be the king. He was for 2 years, by the way. His name means man of shame, so I think we're doing all right so far. He's Saul's surviving son. In the chapter this morning, he challenges Abner. And I don't want to get into why he challenged him or what Abner's response was, but it upset Abner. He was offended, and he decides to defect the whole army to David in Hebron. Abner knew, of course, that the promise of God was to David's family, the house of David, and not the house of Saul. Well, Ish-bosheth was, if you read on into chapter 4 of 2 Samuel, was assassinated by his bodyguards while he was sleeping. Then, in the transition, there's Hebron. Hebron, the city of Hebron, is prominent in this. It was a Levitical city, Joshua 20, verse 17. It was within the boundaries of Judah. It was one of very few cities in the nation of Israel that was designated as a city of refuge. If we look at Numbers chapter 32, verse 26, it says, "But if the manslayer shall at any time go beyond the boundaries of his city of refuge to which he fled, and the avenger of blood finds him outside the boundaries of his city of refuge, and the avenger of blood kills the manslayer, he will not be guilty of blood." So here we have Hebron as one of these cities of refuge. Here we have Joab, who was the avenger of blood, because Abner had killed his brother. Oh, and also, Hebron was the city of Abraham, was the city of Isaac, and was the city of Jacob. They were buried there. And then we have David, and king in Judah for 7 years in Hebron. David, unlike these other jokers that were around him, had a tender heart. And that is because he was a man after God's own heart, which speaks to the very heart of God. David is the savior of the nation. David is a man of blood, but he's also a man of great compassion. David believed in the love of your enemies, doing good to those who hate you, not willing that any should perish, but that all should come to the light. He was interested in reconciliation. He was interested in redemption of the nation. David is the king of promise to bring in the kingdom of Israel and fulfill the covenants of the house of David, salvation through the light-bearing nation. David, a feared warrior, showed great compassion, however, for his enemies. David is the type of Jesus, a savior of the world. Hebron is a city of refuge and the city of life. David invites Abner to Hebron, as we read this morning, the city of refuge, to save his life, but also to help him transition the armies of Israel and Benjamin with the armies of Judah to form a new kingdom of Israel. We have to get into the mind of a warrior to understand that David loved and respected Abner. He was the commander of Saul's armies that he had sustained for probably nearly 40 years. He was a loyal supporter and protector of the Lord's anointed, and David was impressed by that and would have had great appreciation and love for this man, Abner. So Abner heads up north after having a meeting with David in Hebron. He heads north to get the elders of Israel together to bring the nation together. And Joab gets wind of this and by a ruse lures him back to Hebron. and murders Abner in cold blood in the gate of the city. Not in the city, but in the gate of the city. He dropped his guard, I guess, Abner. Joab was the avenger of blood, so legally he could kill Abner outside the gate. He could not touch, however, Abner if he was inside the gate, inside Hebron, the city of refuge. He talked to him at the gateway. This brilliant commander of the armies of the Lord's anointed, a cunning strategist, you couldn't be anything other than that if you were the commander of Saul's army for nearly 40 years and you were still alive. You're still on your feet. He was a survivor of many battles, especially with the Philistines. Loses his focus after all the years of serving, turns his head in what? Beguilement? Misunderstanding? A false sense of security? Ignorance? Pride? Self-serving? Stupidity? To talk to his duplicitous enemy outside the gate of Hebron? Outside the gate of the city of refuge? Where he could have found life? There surely is, brothers and sisters, no fool like an old fool. Why would he stop to talk to the avenger of blood just outside the city? He was that far from life. He was about, well, like this. About that far from salvation, from safety. He was about that far from the protection of the law. He was just that far from the saving, loving arms of his Redeemer, David. He was just that far from salvation, from redemption. He made a bad choice. Instead of life in Hebron, he was buried there. And I have to tell you that I have to get inside this man's head, because all of this has been written for my learning. So I can't read about it unless I try and get inside his head. And come to the conclusion that it's the same fraudulent, deceptive, fatal, fleshly flaw. I know that's a mouthful. The same fraudulent, deceptive, fatal, fleshly flaw that says from the heart of mankind, not your will, Lord, but mine be done, as we flip the narrative, don't we? Not your will, Lord, but mine be done. He wasn't serving his master all those years. He was serving himself and his own glory, his own career. Think about it. Commanding Saul's army was a great gig, as we would call it today. The best gig in the land. You got to travel with the king. You were a hero. You protected the king. You led the armies. You had thousands of people that respected you, who followed every move you made. However, at the end of this illustrious life, self-serving, distraction clearly went out, and he died a fool's death. He was listening to the voices from his own head, not the voice of his master who could save him. Breaking his master's heart. Breaking his master's heart. David, of course, distances himself from the family and his family from Joab's treachery. He invoked a terrible curse upon Joab's family, and you can read about there. It's quite specific. He expressed his frustration regarding the sons of Zeruiah, as we said at the end of that chapter. And when they buried Abner in Hebron, Abner entered the city of refuge in defeat and death instead of victory. And David arranged so that Joab and his officers were to walk in front of the coffin or the bier in torn clothes, in mourning, walking in front of the coffin. This was a full military funeral of a great commander, and they were all in mourning, even the sons of Zeruiah and their people walking in front of the coffin. King David walked behind the bier, weeping. King David wrote the eulogy for the funeral. King David wept aloud at Abner's tomb, and all the people wept even louder as the king wept. And the king sang a lament for Abner. He actually wrote it, because precious was the life of the saints in David's sight. An amazing, inspired verse, four lines long. The first and the last bemoaning the unjust death. The two in the middle, and it's a particular literary form, and we don't have time to get into that, but the two lines in the middle were celebrating Abner's unfettered life, his freedom. Should Abner die as a fool dies? Your hands were not bound, your feet not placed in bronze shackles. You fell like one who falls victim to wicked men. Now, David fully understood the tragedy of this great man, who in the end proved that he was actually just living a lie, self-focused, living life for his career and glory. And there's strong parallels to David weeping at the death of his son Absalom, who had so much promise and so much opportunity, but threw it all away for his pride. And brothers and sisters, I don't like this exhortation. As a matter of fact, I'm profoundly troubled by it. If I might indulge you with the alleged words of Mark Twain, when he said, "It ain't the parts of the Bible that I can't understand that bother me. It ain't the parts of the Bible that I can't understand that bother me. It's the parts that I do understand." Well, I spend my whole life in the ecclesia serving, giving, teaching, looking important, and then die a fool's death when I'm that close to the city. And a dire warning, too. The ecclesia is a great venue for developing self-esteem and exercising self-glory. I know I spent most of my life experiencing it and witnessing it. Will I break my Savior's heart? Because in the end, it wasn't about him at all. It was all about me. But it's bigger than that, isn't it? Because it's all of our exhortation. Will we break our Savior's heart? Because we did not listen to his voice above all others. Because we were constantly distracted by our own egos, our own self-serving. Constantly, consciously or unconsciously, manipulating every life event for self-glory and self-gratification. Now think about that slowly and deeply. Manipulating every life event for self-glory and self-gratification. It's fundamental to our nature. We can't deny it. It's something we must embrace. The mortal scourge, the dangerous denizen of death, that underlies every biblical account from the Garden of Eden to the return of our Master. The mortal scourge, the dangerous denizen of death, that underlies every biblical account from the Garden of Eden to the return of our Master. I think I'm right in saying that. Paul said, "When I want to do good, evil was right there with me." Jeremiah said, chapter 17, verse 9, "When I want to do good, the heart of man is deceitful above all things and beyond cure. Who can understand it?" Will we yield to that, brothers and sisters, and die a fool's death? Our Master, of course, is calling Our master, of course, has an invitation. Jesus is bidding us come to the city of refuge, to his resting place, to the living waters, to the light of the world, to victory, to kingdom and glory, providing tokens of remembrance for us each Sunday morning, bread and wine, that tell us over and over again that he gave his life for us. He gave his life for us. Can we respond with the sacrifice of our lives to him? Or will we die a fool's death? Because in the end, it wasn't about our Savior at all. It was actually really about us.